This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy, and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, Jenny Murray welcoming you to this week's Women's Hour podcast for parents, where we discuss the subject of friendship. As parents, we assume our own lovely children will have lots of friends and there'll be plenty of playdates and sleepovers galore to accommodate. But what if they don't? What do you advise if your daughter comes home and says she's the only one in the class who doesn't have a best friend, or your son says he's known as Billy No Mates? I spoke to Dr. Angharad Rudkin, a clinical psychologist at the University of Southampton, and to Tanith Carey, who's the author of The Friendship Maze. What do parents worry about most when it comes to their child making friends?
Well, exactly what you've said, Jenny, that they're going to come home and say they don't have friends, because parents find that incredibly painful to deal with, the thought that their child might be socially isolated. And what we've been led to believe is that there's nothing we can really do and that we have to kind of watch them from the other side of the school gates. And it's just something children should magically know or not know how to do. And now I think we're realising there's a whole body of fantastic social science research which can actually help parents decode and understand the dynamics of their children's relationships, and then also teach them social skills, if they need it, to form better peer bonds.
And Howard, some children just seem to have it sorted. What makes a child popular?
Well, there's many, many factors, but I think the most important factor is having an easygoing temperament, being someone who can take the rough with the smooth, have a thick skin, I suppose we would also describe it as, and being someone who is able to communicate what is going on for them. So if you've had a bad day at school, you can come home and say to mum, I had a rubbish day, they were really nasty to me. Or you can say to your teacher, I'm a bit bothered by what they're doing in the playground. So that you've got lots of different skills that you can use to both deal with the friendship difficulties, but also be able to talk about them as well.
Now, Tanith, you include a kind of who's who of girls' cliques in the book. What sort of stereotype characters did you spot there?
Well, it's really interesting that whenever humans get together into groups, they start to organise themselves according to their sort of talents and temperaments. And what the research out of America shows that within cliques, girls kind of cast themselves in different roles within their friendship groups. So at the top, obviously, we'll have the queen bee, who is probably the most charismatic or the most influential or the most socially powerful or the most feared girl. Then she'll be accompanied by her sidekick, who basically does her bidding. Then you'll get the messenger, who will transmit sort of bits of gossip and sort of information about the girls between them. You'll have the wannabe, the girl who's desperately trying to stay on the inside of the clique. So, I mean, I think these sound brutal, but actually when girls start to understand how they're part of this machinery, they can understand how to cope with it when things go wrong, and then it's not something personal to them, but it's something that just happens within all sort of human interactions.
We've all been girls, and we know that girls can, at school, be absolutely horrible to each other. What about boys, Angharad? Do they have cliques and be horrible to each other?
Yes, they do, but they do it in a very different kind of way. I mean, when we think about the research which says that the more laid back you are, the easier it is, boys in general, at least for most of childhood, are a bit more laid back than girls. So actually the conflicts won't bother them quite so much. But also boys are very active in their play. So whereas girls in a primary school, you look around a playground and you'll see girls huddled together near a wall, and you'll see boys off somewhere in the field running around playing with a ball. So actually all of these differences mean that they play together differently and they have different kinds of friendships. But just as Tanith was saying, we all tend as humans to categorise. We like the shortcuts that categories give. So even within boys, you'll get the sporty boy, the nerdy boy, the funny boy, the alternative boy. So it's still cliques, but I think it comes with slightly less edginess than it does with girls.
Tanith, you describe a group of mothers who deliberately set out to make their children be friends because they are the same type of families, same sort of house, same sort of holidays and all of that. Mm. How good an idea is it to try to engineer your child's friendships?
Well, I think the thing that children love about their friends is that they get to choose them. It's the first piece of autonomy they really get. It's a chemistry of friendship is something very intangible and is impossible to create. So I think that if a mother does, or a parent indeed, feels the need to do that, I think they need to search their reasons why. I mean, is it because they want to protect their child? Is it because as a child they had difficult social experiences and want to buffer them in some way? Do they feel that sort of there are children who are going to be bad influence, which are going to influence their child negatively? I think that as parents, we rank social status as increasingly important as a way to get on. But I think that if we interfere too much, we take away a child's individual choice, which is really important to their maturing and their growth.
Ang Harrod, you've been full of praise in endorsing Tanith's book. What do you make of parents who try to engineer friendship?
Like Tanith says, I can see where it comes from. All parents are trying to do their best for their children. But I think what's very difficult sometimes as a parent to do is separate your issues from your child's issues. So if you were someone who had real difficulty with friends, found that you got in with the wrong group, for example, or that you were quite isolated as a child, you are more likely to try and manufacture positive relationships for your child or push your child into friendships that maybe they don't particularly want, but because you think it's going to be the best thing for them. And we know with children, the more you try and control them, the more they're just going to rebel at some point in childhood. And if you see a child's kind of childhood and adolescence as a move towards independence, you're trying to build them up to be an adult on their own two feet, that actually them choosing their own friends and getting on with the good and the bad bits of the friendship is all an essential part of that growth.
Tanith, why is it that some children always seem to be on the sidelines?
Well, that's a really, really interesting question, and I think we understand more about that than ever. It seems that some children have real difficulties understanding social cues as quickly as others. So while the average child may take 1 second to understand the body language of a kind of invitation to come and play or a comment, it seems that other children take longer to kind of decode those signals. So they may come over as awkward, or they may make the other child feel uncomfortable. And when children feel uncomfortable, they tend then to call that child weird. But I mean, I think what's really the encouraging message of the book is that there are ways that we can really teach those children ways to interpret those cues more quickly, and also to
learn. How do you teach that?
Well, it's with practice, really. There's lots of different ways, great ways to practice. The first thing is we need to do is think about what unwritten skills it takes to be a friend. For example, it really is important to see the world from the shoes of other people. So maybe talk to your child about seeing the perspective of other people. Say, oh, how do you think Johnny felt that he couldn't play football because he broke his leg? Or how do you think your auntie feels now she's starting a new job? Let them kind of develop that theory of mind where they think about how the world looks to other people, and then they can play better, they can learn to compromise, they can meet in the middle rather than just see the world from their fixed perspective.
I was talking to Tanith Carey and Dr. Ang Harrod Rudkin. Someone who didn't want us to name her emailed, "In my daughter's third year at senior school, she was left out of a party which included a large group of girls who I had thought were her friends. This was a tipping point, and she explained very tearfully how unhappy she was and said she had no real friends. It was awful. There were a couple of girls she did see, but she was very lonely. We talked about it. There was one girl who I'd noticed seemed to be a good friend of all the girls in that group, had known them a long time, but wasn't one of the super cool girls, but seemed very genuine. I suggested she call her and tell her how she felt. To my amazement, she did just that. It took a lot of courage on her part. She's never looked back. I'm sure it wasn't quite as straightforward as it appeared, but it worked. She has a fabulous group of very good friends who've lasted well after school. I don't think the girls were being deliberately unkind. It just hadn't occurred to them to think about how those on the periphery were feeling. And another email came from someone else who didn't want us to name her. I was particularly struck by your discussion about children's friends. My daughter started having friendship problems when she went into secondary school. She didn't like any of the cliques that formed and stood back, choosing not to be a part of them. This has now left her after a year and a half isolated and more alone, as although she gets on with individuals in the groups, the leaders prevent them from forming relationships with her. She's remarkably astute and sees all this, understands it, but it still doesn't make it easier when she comes home saying she has no partner for pair work or had no one to talk to at lunch. She's good at making friends and has many outside school, is clever, very sporty, and you would think she'd be one of the popular ones. I think this makes her more of a threat to the clique leaders, so they close her out even more. She's resilient and managing the situation far better than I am. It breaks my heart daily. So thank you for all your responses to that discussion. And remember, if you have an idea that you would like us to discuss on the podcast for parents, do let us know. Bye-bye.
Collider says BritBox has TV everyone should be watching. Stream acclaimed series with powerful performances from Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, Bella Ramsey and Matthew McFadyen. Discover new BritBox original series you won't find anywhere else. Like Three Little Birds, Agatha Christie's Murder is Easy and a new chapter of BAFTA-winning drama, Time. Stream what the New York Times calls the best of British telly, only on BritBox. Start a free trial at BritBox.com.
I'm Candace Lim.
And I'm Rachel Hampton. We're the hosts of ICYMI, Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And we want to help you make sense of the need-to-know internet stories of the week.
Consider us your internet historians of past, present, and future.
Of the good, the bad, and the truly unhinged.
From nuanced takes on stories we're all closely following, to the ones you wished you heard about.
In case you missed it, that's ICYMI, the podcast that's extremely online, so you don't have to be. Follow and listen now.